From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, the 13th, August 2021. It's the final weekend for this year's Wisconsin State Fair, so get your cream puffs while you still can. And your division-leading Milwaukee Brewers are in Pittsburgh this weekend for a three-game set with the Pirates. So let's start with something that would never happen in Wisconsin. A bartender in upstate New York got fired for not serving beer to a teenager. That just never would happen in Wisconsin. Everybody loves a bargain, so how about this? From the classified section from the Newcastle, Pennsylvania newspaper, for sale, cemetery plot, just $200, so I don't have to spend eternity next to my ex. Ouch. In England, a man tried to rob a bank with a handwritten note, but his handwriting was so bad the teller couldn't read it. The wannabe bank robber is now doing 6 years in prison, 1 year for attempted robbery, and 5 years for bad penmanship. Now, I don't know anything about pickleball, but it's all the rage in the Upper Peninsula. The city of Iron Mountain is putting a 6 p.m. curfew on the game. Apparently, the pickleballers are so rowdy, the cops are sent to the pickleball courts to calm things the heck down. The players object to the curfew, of course, because it interferes with after-work league play and afterward drinking. And finally, our goofy headline of the week from the Bozeman, Montana Daily Chronicle. Red tape holds up new bridge. No, sir, they don't build them like they used to. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Chris Evers, Mike Helzel, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week overall. NASDAQ did lose a little ground, down just a tenth of 1%, shedding 13 points to close at 14,823. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 added 0.7%, setting multiple new records this week, adding 32 points to close at 4,468. The Dow Jones Industrial Average also set numerous new record highs this week, adding 0.9%, tacking on 307 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 35,516. Year to date, what's not to like? With dividends, the Dow is up 17.3%, S&P 500 up 20% with dividends, nice year. And the NASDAQ coming in third at 15.5% total return, including dividends, year to date. Market took a hit on Monday, down 106 points. Stocks headed south, giving up some ground as oil prices fell. Tuesday rebounded 162 points. Wednesday up 220. That's nice. Got kind of flat late in the week. Thursday just up 14. Friday just up 16. Nevertheless, really good week, really good year. You know, Kyle, let's just start with the major news. Consecutive new records for the stocks in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, I think encouraging signs anytime markets are setting new records. We've seen a number of those this year, despite the fact that I think there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. And so you look at what has been the driving force behind that, it's largely been that earnings growth just continues to impress. And so I think as investors kind of wonder, okay, what's the thing that really is the driving force behind all these new records? Understand that corporations have absolutely been finding ways to continue to make money and continue to make money at often record paces. And again, we've seen earnings growth now nearly double what we expected for the second quarter. You know, even just looking back 3 months, earnings growth for the second quarter now about double. The same can be said for what we saw in the first quarter. And as we look ahead for full year, we're now talking about full year earnings growth that, you know, I think is going to surprise many when it comes in. And again, you know, you look at what's driving all these records, it's that earnings growth has largely come in as expected or far better than expected in many cases.
Sometimes you look at the numbers, you can't believe what you're looking at. Earnings growth up 90% year over year. I mean, I've been at this a long time. That never happens.
Yeah, you know, and I think you look at full year 2021, we're talking about not only huge numbers, but even huge numbers that were expected were nearly double what the expectation was at the start of the year. And so I think what has been most surprising is not just that 90% number or some other insanely high number, but the fact that we've set these high expectations when we're far, far exceeding them when it comes to the actual earnings reports.
Pretty interesting to see the markets turn around on Tuesday after the Senate passed the $1 trillion infrastructure bill, roads, bridges, rails. It's the most money they've spent in decades. Caterpillar led the market as an example. So, it makes you wonder what a $3.5 trillion bill will do, if this one took the markets to all-time records.
I think, Bob, as we look at, government spending in particular, it's a thing we hadn't been talking about much for quite a while. Really, the markets had been holding their own despite the fact that, I think politicians were mired in debate over these infrastructure bills. And so we knew that there was something on the horizon. We knew there was the potential to get something passed. But I think, as you point out, Tuesday is such an incredible run higher as we finally did get the positive news that I think many were hoping for in terms of what an infrastructure bill might look like. And so, I think encouraging to see the companies that did rally on that. You mentioned Caterpillar. I think industrials more broadly tend to benefit from those kinds of spending packages. And that's, I think a sign of where some of the opportunity lies. You add in the fact that, we continue to be in some kind of, Cold War with China. And I think you're going to see industrials start to bring manufacturing back. You're going to see industrials start to find new ways that maybe don't involve China. And so you add in this infrastructure spending to some of those trends that had already been developing. And I think you're setting up pretty nicely if you're a manufacturer like Caterpillar, John Deere, any of those, big heavy equipment, but, even looking to smaller manufacturers as well.
Chris, let's bring you into the show. Global bond funds took a hit this week because of China. You had talked at a research meeting weeks ago about the tutoring stocks in China taking a pretty good hit. Now China's trying to restrict borrowing by real estate developers. And it finally took its toll in the bond market this week with, a lot of global bond funds holding big positions in China. What do you think about that, Chris?
Well, I think for a lot of investors maybe that are listening to this show, maybe the specific tutoring companies in China aren't important to them, be it Tao Education Group or New Oriental Education Group that, dropped 80 to 90% after the Chinese government changed its policy on that business line. But what's more important is the broader story about what that means for China's level of business friendliness. And I think it's been very clear over the last month that the Chinese government is attempting to exert a little bit more control against some of the more capitalist areas of the society. And the markets are paying attention to that, be it, global bond funds or even just Chinese listed shares as well. That's definitely a risk that's being repriced into the market as investors look at, the actions that the Chinese government is taking.
And Chris, that when I was looking at the oil market this week, again reminded that China is the world's largest importer of oil, and they imported less in July than they did in June. And that's a very uncommon event in China to see it slow down like that. And that's, before Delta really took over.
Yeah, we've, for the last 10 or 15 years, much of the global economy has focused on China as being that engine of growth in terms of domestic product growth on a global scale. A lot of raw materials, oil, as you put it, have been essentially shipped to China to fuel their growth as a country. And it's going to be interesting looking into the next 10 years as China does transition into a more consumer-facing or consumer-focused economy versus one of hard industrials and export, which they have been for so long. That's going to be a change to the global economy. And I think many countries around the world are looking and saying, well, do we shift some of this production on source, as Kyle said, back onto our onshores, as Kyle said earlier, or do we even look for different areas of the world to produce some of these goods? And what will be that next engine of growth for global GDP?
Mike, as you know, stocks generally have about a 10% pullback every couple of years. the way I do the calendar, you know, we haven't had one in, give or take, almost a year and a half. You know, that tells me that we'll probably get some kind of pullback this fall or winter. You know, it's not the corrections you worry about. It's the secular bear markets that are a problem. But I was reminded this week that, you know, the S&P, forget 10% corrections. We haven't had a 5% correction since last October, and that's one of the longest stretches in years. So I have this sense that people are going to get lulled into complacency, thinking that, oh, yeah, stocks always go up. And I think we need to give them a gut check here that, you know, corrections come and go. Some will argue that they're even healthy for the markets. What are some of your thoughts there?
So it's funny. Have you been listening to some of my phone calls with clients?
Yeah, that's
no. Something that
should I?
No, not at all. No, it's something that I've been talking with clients about because we have been on a really nice run for the past few years. And like you said, some of them are getting kind of giddy. And some of them actually have been like, well, we're going to go off a cliff here soon. And I always tell them that, well, you mentioned it, sometimes a 10% correction or even a little bit of a pullback can be healthy for the markets. And even if you have a 10% correction here in the fall, considering all the money you've made over 2019, 2020, and up to now, you're still going to be way ahead to where you were, you know, a year or two ago. And then the other thing I remind them is we actually had a pretty big pullback at the end of 2018, but nobody really seems to pay attention to that because it happened over the course of 2 months instead of the pandemic sell-off, which happened over the course of 2 weeks. And I remind them of that 2018 actually finished in the negative territory because of that. You know, they lose some of the good feelings, but it kind of puts it in perspective for them that these things do happen fairly frequently.
Kyle, back to you. You know, pretty good outbreak of the Delta COVID virus. I saw this week that OpenTable has seen a 20% drop in restaurant reservations. Southwest Airlines came out this week and said that they've had a pretty good increase in cancellations, pretty good slowdown in bookings, and, you know, all this good news to share. A couple of dark clouds out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think so many anecdotal stories, another one in the Wall Street Journal today talking about an event planner in New York City that's had five major events already for later this year canceled this week. And it just seems like we're in that phase again where there's enough uncertainty that people aren't willing to look too far ahead. We've seen it in sentiment surveys. We saw the small business survey this week point to far fewer small businesses seeing the opportunities in the next 12 months that they saw maybe even a month or two ago. And so I think, you know, the challenge is that tends to be self-fulfilling, that the worse people feel about the next 12 months, the less likely they are to invest in those next 12 months. And so for consumers, you see it in fewer airline tickets booked or fewer restaurant reservations made, and that makes its way into the economy. And I think it becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes that negative feedback loop where the very act of thinking that things might be worse actually makes things worse from an economic perspective. Now, the other argument there is that maybe there's some good reasons why we shouldn't be going out to restaurants right now. Maybe there's some good reasons why we shouldn't be doing unnecessary air travel. And I think, you know, there's certainly something to some of that. But at the same time, I think we've done a fairly good job of trying to navigate this virus. We've done a fairly good job of finding ways to be safe and be healthy. And so, you know, I think there is a happy medium we can find in many of these cases. And so I think, you know, it's one of those where we see some upticks in sentiment, you know, earlier in the year, and now we're seeing this kind of swing the other direction. But it's clear that a lot of that has been because of this variant.
And I read recently that the number of people getting vaccinated is on the rise now. So hopefully people are changing their mind and they want to keep themselves and everybody else that they see healthy heading in the right direction. Joel, number of economic reports that came out this week, first-time claims for unemployment insurance. I thought that was kind of encouraging.
Yeah, it's encouraging, Bob, because we're down below 400,000 per week for new claims And, you know, that compares to 5.3 million back in April of 2020. So that's quite a lowering. We've kind of leveled off, though, since mid-June. We're, you know, for various reasons, we sort of seem to be stuck in a lower gear. But, you know, there are encouraging signs out there. We had the Labor Department report this week that a record number of jobs were posted in June, 10.1 million. So we've got more job postings than we have unemployed people looking for jobs. And we haven't had that since before the last recession, before the pandemic hit, basically. So that's a good sign. And so we expect those claims to keep coming down. We also, and I mentioned this last week, but we've got about 12 million Americans who are you know, claiming unemployment insurance benefits, and that's a lot, but that's down from 29 million the year before. And about 70% of those people claiming unemployment are in programs that are related to the pandemic, and a lot of those are going to be going away next month. So those should be coming down as well.
Productivity numbers, those were on the rise?
Those were interesting. You know, and they jump around a lot. That's a very volatile number from quarter to quarter, and even they correct them a couple of times, and there's a lot of variation in there. A couple of things that were important with that, I thought, was that it showed that that productivity is back to the point it was before the pandemic, that our output in the economy is back above that. But the hours worked is down. So those are the two factors that go into productivity. And it says, I mean, if we can put out more economic stuff and do it with, you know, people working not as many hours, that's, you know, that's overall good for the economy. The other thing that was interesting in that report is that if you measure from the second quarter of this year to the second quarter of last year, labor costs have actually gone up only 0.1%. So as we, you know, have been concerned parts of this year about inflation, that's one part of inflation that doesn't seem to be as worrisome right now. The labor costs aren't going up that high.
Well, pretty encouraging stuff we're talking about here, folks, with the markets in the United States at all-time highs. You know, enjoy the gains, folks. Pretty hard to predict short-term. It's unbelievable how many people ask me every single day of my life where the market's going. You know, you have a sense with interest rates low, it's tough for stocks to get hammered when interest rates are so low. That could change in the future, though. Long-term average for the 10-year Treasury is 5.5%, give or take at 1.3 now. We've got a long ways to go there. You know, one of the first things I learned in managing money decades ago was don't fight the Fed. And it took me a while to fully understand that. But, you know, I'm a believer after 45 years, don't fight the Fed. So the Fed is still in the process of buying $120 billion of bonds a month. Hey, that's a lot. You look at the overnight rate, still very low. Banks are willing to lend. The world is just awash in cash. And against that backdrop, there's a lot of liquidity out there, folks. And you go, you know, look at the economy. You know, we learned 2 weeks ago that we're no longer recovering. We've recovered. We're back to where we were pre-pandemic for economic growth, plus some. So there's just a whole lot to like here. Of course, it won't go on forever. I think it's really important to stay balanced. You know, I've been telling clients for most of the spring, I never knew I had to worry about the Suez Canal until last winter. I could have told you it was in Egypt. I could have told you they should have built it wider. But, you know, that's about the extent of my knowledge of the Suez Canal. So things come up that you just don't anticipate. But I think we've got a backdrop now of low rates, really strong earnings, and the future looks pretty bright to me at this point in time.
You know, Bob, I think just to pile on to that a bit, we talk about things that maybe aren't foreseen or unexpected things that are negatives to the market, but there's also a lot of unforeseen and potentially unexpected positives to come. And I think productivity gains have been one that we've been talking about that potentially could be the game changer. Joel, you know, you mentioned it in the economic data this week. And, you know, if inflation is a concern, productivity is the thing you hope digs you out of that potential problem. And so I think productivity gains will be the one that maybe not a lot of people were expecting to come, but which, you know, I think we were forced into because of the pandemic. We've been benefiting from years of technological shift, and I think it's coming to a head now and kind of getting its own momentum even. And so I think, you know, productivity gain would be the thing that I would hang my hat on as something that is very supportive of stocks, not just where they are, but stocks continuing to run higher from here.
Folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We enjoyed doing the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.